This is a keeper, folks. Record it. Keep it. This is going to be a keeper. Proper, proper rodeo we've got here in America.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, August 1st, 2008, and this is episode number 139. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to bring you all kinds of great stuff about MotoGP and motorcycle road racing. Got a really, really big show this week. Of course, we did a call with Jules. We couldn't pass up the opportunity to keep talking about the Laguna Seca race because the U.S. MotoGP round was fantastic. It was so much fun. We had such a great weekend, and the race was fantastic, and all of that. So talk a little bit more about that race, including a Pepsi Challenge of commentary like we did last year, a very, very popular item in the last year's shows. It's all good this year, though, and we're comparing some snippets from four different broadcasting teams, pretty much covering, well, not all, but many of the English language broadcasting teams, because we got the CBS broadcasting team, because it was on over-the-air television here in the United States. We've got the official Dorna broadcasting team, like you hear on Speed Channel when it's normally on Speed Channel, or like you hear on MotoGP.com. We got Eurosport of Toby Moody and Randy Mamola and Julian Ryder, and we got the BBC commentary team of Charlie Cox and Steve Parrish. So we kind of compare them, their sort of comments and so forth at the same sections in several points during the race, and kind of talk about it, and of course talk about the race and all sorts of other stuff. So that's a real interesting call. Before we get to that, we've got some news, late breaking news, and some listener email, and an announcement about yet another auction that Steve Jones is running of USMotoGPFans.com fame. And that's about all we got, but it's a lot of stuff, and so why don't we go ahead and just jump right on into it. Before I do that, though, oops, almost forgot, I do want to send a big, giant shout-out thank you to Joe Pop and Peter Shortall, both of whom were kind enough to make a donation to the MotoGPOD cause, and I really do appreciate it. And Joe Pop actually specifically instructed me on his donation that it was to be spent on beer, and I could not waste it on silly things like bandwidth and internet hosting and Skype bills and all that. It had to go for beer. And I think he used the word delightful to describe the beer. So thanks very much, Joe. I really do appreciate that. And here's to you, Joe. Right now, I'm enjoying a Twilight Ale, which is from my Deschutes Brewery, my favorite microbrew. They're based in Bend, Oregon, and they have some tasty, tasty brews. Let me tell you, Twilight Ale is one of their seasonals. They only run it during the summer, and it's delightful. And I'm going to go ahead and take your donation with me to Indy, and Jules and I are going to, tip a glass or two in your direction based on that. So thanks very much, Joe. Do appreciate it. And thanks also very much, Peter Shortall. Do appreciate that as well. So enough of that. Why don't we go ahead and get on with the rest of the show? All right, we got a news flash here. Did it, and all of that. Unfortunately, this story hit Superbike Planet too late for Jules and I to talk about in our call, which we actually did last night. However, they're going to put a link of the course into this in the MotoGPOD show notes, because I want you to go to superbikeplanet.com, and I want you to read their stuff, and I want you to support them and all of that good stuff. But the headline on this story is, MotoGP is Vermeulen being re-signed. Possible huge impact on Spies going MotoGP in 09. Reportedly, Australian Chris Vermeulen is in the middle of contract talks with Suzuki to renew his current Suzuki MotoGP contract. Vermeulen was not exactly setting the woods ablaze via the results sheets. By May, it was thought he was to be on the outs, blah, blah, blah. However, his double podium finishes at the German and American MotoGP round seemed to have turned the tide for him. So, basically, I don't want to go through and read the entire article, because you guys need to go to Superbike Planet and check it out. However, the gist of this is this is going to have a huge impact on whether or not Ben Spies, AMA champion, AMA Superbike champion this year, goes MotoGP racing, because Suzuki is not going to run three motorcycles. They If they sign Vermeulen and things are looking like they want Caparossi back, that's going to leave Ben Spies out in the cold as far as the musical chairs are concerned. So what is going to happen there? If Suzuki's rider stable is filled, then this is, I'm quoting again from the article, this is going to close a door for Ben Spies to get into MotoGP. However, Fausto Grassini has expressed interest in talking to Ben Spies about racing on a Honda. Yeah. Now, that one I'm not sure about. I think that Ben Spies has loyalties to Suzuki, then he's going to want to try and pursue and all of that. Probably going to see some answers on this starting here very, very shortly, possibly at Brno. And who knows how it might turn out. I would think, I mean, you know, I love Loris Caparossi. He's an awesome guy and is such a storied career and all of that. On the other hand, I mean, the injuries that he suffered this season and, you know, he's doing well when he's out there. He's doing okay. But, it might be time for Loris to move on. So if Suzuki has not already signed that contract with Loris, and they do want to keep Chris Vermeulen around, then they may want to consider going with Spies and Vermeulen, although they probably want to have an Italian or Spanish rider on the team just to balance things out. So, I don't know. It all remains to be seen, and we will see it as silly season shakes things out. Longtime friend of the podcast, Steve Jones, who runs the fan suite there at the USGP, like we talked to him last week about, usmotogpfans.com. He sent me an email, and Steve says, please give a quick mention of a special pair of seats to Indy that I have up for auction on eBay. And this is a plug to help Steve out, and if you bear with me here real quick, this is an excellent deal, and one of you guys out there that wants to go to Indian style, this is the way to do it. These are two sweet seats with a hotel room for two and a police escort to the track. And here's the kicker. The seats are in Mary Holman George's personal suite. She is the chairman of the board of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Food and beverage is included. You can find it on eBay. Of course, there's a link, which I will put in the show notes, or you can just go to eBay and search for Indy MotoGP Suite, and you'll find Steve's auction up there. The reserve price that he's got set on this is $2,670, which is exactly half of what Steve and his wife Jane paid for the whole package of four tickets. They are using the other two themselves. So you also get to meet Steve Jones and his lovely wife, Jane. Very, very nice people. And this is definitely the way to go. A little bit more information that we got going on here. This is from the auction, basically. She says, you know, you have to go to Indy. Why not do it in style? This package has everything you need but a plane ticket and an air horn. Last March, Mary Holman George donated a package for four to be auctioned off for charity. My wife and I bought it to use with another couple, but unfortunately the other couple backed out. Grr. So we're still going to, Steve and Jane are still going, but they need to find another two people to take the other half of the package. The reserve price is set at half of what they paid for the original package of four. You get two tickets in Mary Holman George's private suite, including food and beverage. And that'll be, you know, beer and wine and as well as, you know, soft drinks and all that stuff. So, I mean, this is a good deal. And you can probably power through $2,600 worth of beer in a weekend. And then you also get a hotel room for three nights, September 12th, 13th, and 14th, departing on the 15th, and a police escort on race morning from the hotel to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is kind of cool. So he says, blah, 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 multiple suites. Ms. George has multiple suites. They haven't yet decided which one it will be in. However, he's got a map, and any one of them would all have their good points. I mean, this is awesome. And although down at the bottom of the email, Steve is kind of giving this with a big, giant disclaimer, but there's a possibility that there might be like a certain number of paddock passes for the whole suite. So, you know, there might be like 50 people in this suite and there's like 15 paddock passes and you sort of check them out, something along those lines. But since paddock passes at Indy are not, you can't get them. It's not like Laguna Seca. So that alone there is worth a lot to add on to the price of that thing. So check that out. Go up on eBay, follow the link from MotoGPOD.com, or check it out by going to eBay and searching for MotoGP Indy Suite, or go to usmotogpfans.com. I'm sure Steve has some stuff up there, and he'd be happy to hear from you. And if you do talk to him, tell him that you heard about it on the podcast. I'd appreciate that a lot. And one last thing I probably should mention is that this auction ends on August 8th. That is Saturday evening. It's a week from after this show is up. So you guys that are, you know, good listeners and you listen to the show in the first week and everything, you still got some time. August 8th at 8:51 Pacific Daylight Time. That's in the evening, or no, actually probably in the morning. 08:51 in the morning. So basically figure Friday night. So you got a week, and check it out. I got so much email. Jules and I did both this past week, past couple of weeks. We've gotten a lot of quality email all over about all kinds of different subjects and everything. And that's really, really good stuff. Like I said, I do like getting the email. I like to reply to all of them. Sometimes it's a pretty short reply, a little bit pressed for time and that sort of thing. And I try to pick out the good ones through the week and say, oh, maybe I'll read this in the show. And a lot of times it doesn't end up in the show because the show's too long and all that sort of thing. But I do want to read several here that I've picked out. And this is an ongoing thing of the whole Casey Stoner. As you know, Jules and I were facing massive amounts of email a few weeks ago with our sort of somewhat stoner bashing kind of thing going on. And even though we still don't feel that we were really bashing Stoner, but you know, when you're a fan of somebody, you know, it's pretty hard to sort of hear somebody else that's not being a major fan. So, you know, I accept it. It's good. Everybody has an opinion. And, you know, we had some good exchanges and interchanges back and forth, email with all you guys out there, all you listeners. But since Laguna Seca and the comments there at Park Fermé that Stoner made with BBC, I've gotten a lot of email from the other side of the fence, with more or less my side of the fence. I've gotten it from both, and we're going to read a little bit of each kind of email, just some interesting takes on things. So let's just go ahead and jump into this before I continue blathering on. First one we got here is from Josh, and this one is a little bit of all one paragraph, so I'm going to be paraphrasing it as I kind of go through. He says, "Dude, the more you try to bash on Stoner about his attitude, the more I love the guy. I respect the guy for his talent, and yes, I understand you're not trying to discredit him for whatever reason, but however, I couldn't help but think that what happened at Parc Fermé at Laguna Seca is actually good for the sport. It brings so much more fireworks back in a GP. It's great, and I love it. But more than anything, I love Stoner's fierce attitude. He says, I don't have cable, and if anything, I would pay to see Rossi and Stoner brawl it out like two machine jockeys. He says, remember the rivalry between Rossi and Mac Biaggi and that incident where they sort of exchanged fists, and yet somehow no one really saw it? Well, that brought a lot of attention to the GP world, and I'm not sure if you guys read an interview on Jeremy Burgess about his thoughts concerning the spec ECU, but Jeremy commented something saying in the vein of, you know, instead of worrying about the ECU, Dorna should worry about getting more PR on the series. And I think that if Dorna knows how to PR themselves, this should be what they're looking for. A good rivalry, think of it like Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer in Top Gun. And Josh, you had me until that part there, but I'll let you slide on it. So he says, Josh continues on, he finishes up. He says, so you have a young gun who's out there to beat everyone, and you don't go by the rules. Well, actually, Stoner does go by the rules. Oh, the rules of sportsmanship type thing. Yeah, okay, I understand. And on the other hand, you have a veteran who's probably the best writer ever to grace this earth. I'm a big fan of 46. He says, to be honest with you, I think we really should just wait and see how this develops in the future, because if anything, I would like to see an angry Stoner as opposed to a zombie like Pedrosa. Let's face it, as talented a writer as Pedrosa is, he's really boring to watch when he's being interviewed. So, all right, Josh, I appreciate it. Good email. You're right. And actually several others kind of continuing on in the same vein. And this next one comes from Joe Pop, who, as we heard earlier in the podcast, was kind enough to do a donation. And don't forget to check out Joe Pop's band. He's got the Horn Rims. So look it up on iTunes. Just Horn Rims, all one word. You can find him on iTunes. Good band. And Joe Pop's listens to MotoGPOD. So he's certainly a plus in my book on that. And plus, the music's pretty good. I like it a lot. So in any case, Joe's email is subject is Stoned. And he says, Bob, I really enjoyed your podcast. Thanks for the nice long one for us subway commuters. I'm really bummed about Casey's comments. I was a fan until he took the fast train to Winerville about the race. Not shaking Rossi's hand, even if they were tough passes, is inexcusable for any sportsman. Rossi also never touched him with his bike, so maybe Casey is mad at himself because he lost the game of chicken. He could have laughed it off and he said, okay, Rossi, it's on now, and then flashed that big grin and he would have won the hearts of many. But as it stands now, he just looks like a spoil sport. Heck, boxers shake hands after beating the crap out of each other for 15 rounds. That's what it is out there. It's a battle. Rossi fought like a bulldog and won any way that he saw possible. It's a war, man. Casey should have been jumping up and down that he finished second after he crashed. That was an amazing feat that few can claim. To quote Bluto in Animal House, but no, he has to act like an ass. Perhaps I'm judging too harshly and it was a heat-of-the-moment thing for Stoner. I guess we're going to see next race. And He continues on. Joe says, "Oh, I'm just curious if Biaggi told Rossi that's racing when he gave him the elbow and guided him off track during that race in 2004. Was it 2003? Actually, I think it was earlier than that. I think it was that was still two strokes, 2002. He says, like you said, though, it might be a great rivalry if they're at each other's throats, Rainey and Schwant style. The next race should be a doozy. So thanks again, Joe. Excellent email. Liked that one. And now let's see, kind of go back a little bit to the other side of the fence. Got Mark Manning. He sent us an email. He says, Bob, I wanted to briefly comment on your thoughts regarding Stoner's attitude and the media's perception of him as a whiner. I agree with you that Casey's actions and comments in the media came across as whining. I would also concede that it may harm Casey's reputation as an individual, but for the sport of MotoGP, it is great. A timely analogy in another sport would be Brett Favre's attempt to come back with Green Bay. It's a complete grease fire, and I cannot look away. In the same vein, Casey's inappropriateness and tension with Rossi makes for great entertainment. I have to imagine the Dorna execs may be quietly ratings happy, and I certainly hope that Casey continues to throw some grease on that fire. Keep up the excellent work, Mark. So thank you very much, Mark. Excellent email and good analogy there. And those of you who are not football fans, American football, for you know our international listeners or guys like myself that aren't really big followers of the sport and everything, we're talking about Brett Favre, who is just possibly like he's been around for a long time. I'm not sure how old he is, but he's been playing for a long time. He's been playing for as long as Noriyuki Haga has been racing. And he played for the Green Bay Packers. So if you want to look it up and learn about what's going on with the Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers, it's Brett Favre, and it's spelled F-A-V-R-E, and you can look it up there. All right, let's see. One last email, now that we're not going to digress about football, and this one is from Lawrence of Suburbia in Connecticut, USA, and Lawrence sends, I read somewhere that Valentino studies old GP tapes looking for go-fast tips and strategies. Watching him at Laguna made me think that he must have carefully studied Eddie Lawson's great win at Laguna in 1988. Valentino employed Lawson's patented inside pass in turn two several times throughout the race, most notably against Hayden on the first lap. Additionally, Rossi, in my view, clearly brake-checked Stoner in exactly the same corner that Wayne Gardner attempted to do the same dirty move against Lawson. Eddie did not get caught out, as Stoner obviously did. And then he's got a link to a story on Superbike Planet, which, of course, I will put in the podcast notes up at MotoGPOD.com. And you can read a feature on the 1988 USGP up there on Superbike Planet. And let's see, continues on, Lawrence says, in the clip that you played on the show, this is last week's show, the interview asks Casey if he felt that Valentino brake-checked him. Casey diplomatically blames himself, as he suggested he should, but I feel that Rossi slowed deliberately. Casey had to brake so hard to avoid running into Rossi that he lifted the rear and then ran off. He says, also, if you get the chance, watch the 1988 USGP. It's a classic. So, all right, Lawrence, thank you very much. Excellent email, a lot of good points, and I will. I'm going to try and see if I can gather up that race and watch it. And until then, you guys, like I said, got the link up there for the story on Superbike Planet. And I think we are seeing the beginning of a new rivalry. I mean, we've only got one race, and we're in the summer break. Things might be a lot different at Brno, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. And one last email we got going on here. This is from Scooter Dork, a.k.a. Mike. So Mike sent us a message. He says, Bob, I think it's only been 56 years that Noriyuki Haga has been racing. Or are you combining his amateur and professional racing careers? So thanks a lot, Mike. Wasn't 100% sure. I was just throwing numbers out there. But appreciate it and glad you guys appreciated that joke. All right. We got Jules on the phone again. How you doing today, Jules?
Good evening. I'm doing fine.
Good, good. It's always nice to talk to you. It's been a week, and but this race was so momentous in so many ways that we're just going to talk more about it because there's so much to go on about. It was a lot of fun. It was fun to be there, and it was fun that it was such a good race. It really was. And we have a kind of cool thing. You may remember the Pepsi challenges that I did last year when the MotoGP races were on CBS and Fox. And the commentary was so bad that I felt I had to do the Pepsi challenge to point out how bad the commentary was. Now this year, and Jules and I have talked about this quite a bit, that I think CBS did a smashing job. And I've actually had a few emails back and forth with various people of one side of the fence or the other, but I still stand behind it. The commentary this year with Greg White and Kevin Schwantz on the CBS that we saw was light years ahead of what we saw last year. But the whole Pepsi Challenge thing of the different commentaries was so much fun, and this particular race had several different major incidents that we're going to do it again. So,
excellent.
Yes. So basically, Jules and I, we're going to, why don't we listen to the CBS version that we had here in the United States with Greg White and Kevin Schwantz, the Dorna version, which is Gavin Emmett and John Hopkins was in there, and
Chaz Davies.
Chaz Davies, yes, exactly. But Nick Harris was notably absent.
Yes. Earlier in the broadcast, Gavin would mention that Harris had a really bad case of laryngitis or something, or basically.
Oh,
just,
wow.
So he missed the race where he would have gotten hoarse anyway.
Right.
Because he would have been screaming the whole time.
Wow. Yeah. And I didn't watch it that closely. I missed that portion, so I didn't see that in the pre-show. So I was kind of wondering where he was, but I figured it must be something like that, that he basically had the weekend off for one reason or another.
Right.
Wow. I'll bet he was upset. And then the BBC with Steve Parrish and Charlie White. Good commentary team. And then, of course, Eurosport with Toby Moody, Julian Ryder, and Randy Mamola. And we're going to basically take three separate incidents here in the race, and I think you can guess the three that we're going to pick, and we're going to listen to the commentary. Yes, Jules can guess because he's heard them, so no cheating, Jules. But for those of you out there in the audience, we're going to start off with Jorge Lorenzo's vicious high side on lap one. And just, where we come into the race is as the group of riders is coming around turn four, and we're seeing them come down that little sort of short straightaway there at Laguna Seca between turn four and turn five. And so the various commentary teams are doing their thing. They're getting warmed up for a race where they think that it's going to be a Stoner runaway. Everybody thinks Stoner's going to win. And some of their comments there. And then Jorge has his high side. So let's go ahead and why don't we just listen to all four of those and then we'll chat about that.
Tires. It's now to see if Nicky Hayden can hang with those guys in these first few laps. There goes Jorge.
Oh, no, that was huge. Absolutely massive high side. Remember, he's hurt his legs before doing exactly that. Man, that was a big one.
We said about the Michelins, and Jorge's on the Michelin. He just tapped the power on, and that was just not enough heat in that tyre. Unfortunately, it flicked him way up in the air there.
And look, Rossi has now taken a place from Casey Stoner while all this is going on up into the corkscrew.
All right, so that was the BBC commentary. And
No, that was huge.
Yes, absolutely massive high side.
Wow.
But you can hear, these guys are just watching the race, and then all of a sudden the camera goes to Jorge Lorenzo, and it caught him by surprise, and the impressions are telling.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Now let's go to the CBS version.
Rossi,
I think that was Andrea Dovizioso making a slip up into fourth position there, but
and a big high side from Dovizioso. He goes
Lorenzo.
Over Jorge Lorenzo
Jorge
on
Lorenzo.
The Chupa Chup. So the Fiat Yamaha rider with a huge high side and holding his leg. That was a big move in turn five, and it didn't work. Jorge Lorenzo out of this race. And a pass for the lead. Valentino Rossi around Casey Stoner. Something we haven't seen so far recently.
There's a little bit of a gaffe there. That's a high side by Dovizioso.
Yeah. Schwantz is like, that's Lorenzo. But you can tell, though, that Greg White is a fan, and he's mostly knowledgeable,
right?
And all of that, and I mean that's a totally understandable thing. He's watching a TV set, so to misspeak a writer, is completely understandable.
Right.
But yeah, I think he was more animated than the BBC guys of like, oh my God, kind of a thing.
Yeah. And Schwantz actually stays remarkably calm throughout the entire thing. So.
Right.
And the Rossi pass afterwards. So.
Yeah, exactly. Because we didn't see the Rossi pass because the cameras were on Lorenzo. So we come back and it's like, wow, look at, lead change.
Right.
And all of that. So let's go to the official Dorna one.
Ninth on the grid and seems to be all the way up into fourth spot now. Lorenzo fighting back quickly. Oh, wow! What a crash, Jorge Lorenzo! High sides! That's an amazing crash from Jorge Lorenzo. And we've seen some big, big crashes for him this year. And down he goes. He was in fourth position. And the Yamaha garage watches on. He's going to be lucky to be able to walk away from that one. They head up to the corkscrew for the first time. An attack from Rossi. Valentino Rossi goes through and leads in the US Grand Prix now.
So, yeah, I love the we've seen some big crashes from Lorenzo this year.
And that was an amazing one.
Yeah.
Like, congratulations, Lorenzo. That was an amazing crash.
Yes.
And, Chaz Davies and actually, Hoppe didn't come into the broadcast until about 4 or 5 laps in into the race, or even further. And so it's just Gamet, Gavin Emmett talking.
Gamet.
Gamet. and he does, yeah, and he does a good job by himself there.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, the guy's he's talented. He's having to take over for the both sides of the commentary booth and all of that. And he does tend to play second fiddle a bit to Nick Harris during the normal commentaries and everything. But he's definitely you know, a class act that could do it all by himself all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, and actually, talking about Lorenzo, we'll cover that later in the podcast. But there's some comments from Lorenzo that I want to talk about.
Okay.
So let's listen to the last, the Eurosport.
He's about fourth. Dovizioso. Oh, he was fourth. He loses out to Lorenzo. Oh! That's an enormous crash from Jorge Lorenzo. That's a China kind of crash. He injured his ankles in China, and that is a monster crash for Jorge Lorenzo. Massive. I got on my notes. He's returning. He's back on form, and he's lobbed it already. Rossi leads, Julian.
Oh, there's half a second taken out at the top of the corkscrew.
He's got him.
This is what Valentino needed.
It's just such a build-up. Like, those four broadcasts in a row are such a great build-up.
Yeah, actually, like, yeah, we just played them in alphabetical order, but I think it did the build-up. And then you get to the Eurosport, and it's just the insanity level.
Even before the crash, it's like, Toby's already super excited. We're on the fourth corner of the first lap.
Yeah. I need to get his – he did commentary on Formula One, you know. I want to hear that, and I need to find that.
I just wanted to mention, like, both him and Julian must have been out of his seats when they were screaming. And
I'm sure they were. Yeah, I agree.
Then Julian's very right on it. Like, as soon as Rossi does the pass and the corkscrew, he's already like, this is what he needed. This is what he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Julian is an amazingly analytical guy.
Exactly,
huge wealth of knowledge, and yes, he is the classic analytical. It's very, very impressive, actually, how well he can dissect. That's not a good word, because
bad. He does it during the race. Like, it's easy to do that kind of thing, like when you've already been able to think about the race and talk about it the way we do, like a couple of days afterwards.
Right.
He's doing it live.
right. He's watching the race. He's seeing it as it happens, as we see it happen and all of that. And we're still sort of sitting there stunned with our mouths open and he's talking exactly. about it. Yeah. Or I'm shouting at the guy, sit down. That's in front of me in the grandstands. the lap one, Jorge Lorenzo incident, which, you know, if you're going to pick out points of the race of where we want to dissect the commissaries, that was the first one. Now, the next one is going to be on lap four, where we had Rossi's little off-track excursion, which has been compared quite aptly to Alex Zanardi in the kart race. You saw that YouTube, right?
Yes, Jules? Yes, 1996. Yes. Looking at it.
Yes. And, Zanardi, I mean, if you don't know anything about four-wheel racing guys and all of that, big kart racer, and I think he spent some time in Formula One, I'm not sure.
Yeah, he did, definitely. Yep.
Well, yeah, and then he had a horrific accident at, somewhere, and was paralyzed. So lost his legs, actually.
Yes, he lost his legs, yes.
Right, lost his legs. So he's, and the thing is Alex Zanardi is still involved in various different ways in the whole racing community.
Well,
so
he's still racing rally for a while. And NASCAR, I believe.
Without legs? I know he had some sort of exhibition setup in his cockpit
where he could drive with just his hands.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, we're getting totally digressing.
I once saw a video of him talking about it. He actually has, you know, parts of his legs still have remained, and he still has mobility with them. So he was actually able to devise some kind of device where he can work the gas pedal or something like that. So he was able to either brake or accelerate, I don't remember, with his legs. And the rest of it was hand controls.
Yeah.
He did quite well, actually, that way. And then eventually he retired, and I think he's running some kind of a team. But don't know.
But a neat
Somebody
guy.
Somebody out there
all
knows
all.
That.
Yes, and we're digressing. But he basically had a very similar passing incident at the corkscrew. Although actually his was more clear cut of actually making up a position on his opponent. Where, you know, with Rossi, it wasn't quite so much.
Right, right.
Because we were talking about that whole when does the rule kick in, right? Because, yeah, I remember the email, which unfortunately I don't have right in here in front of me, but the email said that CART changed their rules the following year to prevent that sort of thing from happening again. So, in any case, so let's go to that, and we'll go ahead and do it and start again with the BBC guys on lap 4.
Have a look at the gap back to the rest of them, will you? It's about 2 postcodes. Rossi fighting back, stuffs it down the inside. Stoner has to pick it up. Oh, no, you don't. I'm going to have this anyway. Simon, this is a fabulous duel between the two of them.
Well, I just said that he had to get back quickly, and that's exactly what he's done. He's really going to start annoying about Casey Stoner here. He's hunting, and he's not hunting now.
Absolutely physical stuff. Excuse me, I think you're fine. Rossi fights back. And now Stoner tries to cut back down the inside. Rossi's on the gravel. They've almost touched each other. Oh, that really pushed Stoner wide. That was Rossi's problem. That became Stoner's problem. Big time. Stoner now is seeing red. Rossi's seeing red behind him.
It's going to end in tears. It's going to end in, I tell you, these two guys are fighting. And, of course, we are fighting for the championship.
So the actual gravel incident was quite a long ways into that clip because I backed it way up because it's hard to find a point where it's sort of suitable to come in, especially
right,
when you're trying to find it before.
On that lap, we had quite a few passes, and then Rossi passed Stoner on the inside of 5, and then Stoner fought back up the hill. They were side by side, and then Rossi did the gravel excursion.
Right, right.
Those guys did very... did well. They
hot diggity
very,
dog. It was a
hot
good
diggity dog.
Yes, it was. It was a good commentary. So next on the agenda would be the CBS version of the same thing. We're starting at roughly the same point, which is actually they were just I believe where I grabbed this one. They were just coming out of turn 5 or turn 6. So I'd have to double check my notes. So here's CBS.
In the slipstream of Stoner, he's out. It looks like he's coming up the inside. Side by side they go. And Valentino with the inside move. Stoner fighting back.
Great block pass there by Valentino. In on the brakes. Didn't really have the ability to get all the way past him, but took the position from him in case he had to get out of the gas and let him have the spot.
Side by side, Stoner leaning on Valentino. Rossi makes the pass into the corkscrew. Rossi now aggressively up the inside in the corkscrew. Tries to block the drive through the dirt. They touch. Stoner push wide as Rossi still with the advantage. This is incredible racing here at Laguna Seca.
We haven't seen this much passing in all the MotoGP races this year. This is absolutely great to see. I'm sure the guys that are following close behind this group think the same too. It's given the ability to close the gap a little bit.
There's the CBS version, and poor old Kevin Schwantz got a lot of heat last year as being not appropriate, and including from this show. As being not the best color guy and all of that. And I even talked to him, and we played it in last week's show. And I think that is about as colorful a commentary as you can get. That the giggling was the best.
Yeah, yeah. That one wins my vote for this.
Yes, it's like he's watching, and it's like he knows this is awesome stuff. And he's just, Greg White was going basically, you know, ape over there, and Schwantz is staying relatively calm, but just sort of
giggling,
you know,
just
giggling,
really enjoying it. I have to say, what the hell is Greg White talking about slipstreaming between 4 and 5? Okay, whatever. You know,
whatever.
I mean, slipstreaming in MotoGP happens on long straights in Catalunya and Mugello, not at Laguna Seca.
Right, right. You're not going to do a lot of drafting between turn 4 and turn 5, which is, I don't know, a couple hundred yards tops.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a good point. But the thing is, though, is he did have the enthusiasm, and he, you know,
yeah,
so
good,
I...
good on him. Definitely.
Good on him. But yes, but Schwantz stole that show.
Yeah.
So, all right, next up is the Dorna feed of the same turn.
Can Rossi learn something from him? You see him attack straight away. Wow.
Rossi goes through and pushes Stoner wide. Casey won't like that one bit.
That
tries to take the pace, doesn't he? Has a bit more drive coming out of that corner, but Rossi stood strong. Stoner in second position once more. Round the outside. going up the Rahal straight. Unbelievable stuff from Casey Stoner. And Rossi comes straight back at the corkscrew. We haven't seen action like this as Rossi runs off track and pushes Stoner wide. What amazing stuff here. Valentino Rossi and Casey Stoner duking out there, doing so at the championship. And Stoner almost tries to go around the outside at turn 10. This is unbelievable stuff.
Wow. Okay. Gavin Emmett wins the enthusiasm award on that one.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is that we hear a little bit of Chaz Davies in the beginning. And when racers are watching this race, they seem to just really be like this in World Superbike when they do commentary. They're just... Maybe it's just they've seen it all, and it's just not as
they've actually
wild
done
to them.
It.
Yeah. They stay very calm and collected, but
but
the rest of us are just like, oh my god, and so we didn't learn anything there, like in terms of slipstreaming or anything like that. But
no, I actually, and I kind of made a mental note to comment on that one because we had Chaz Davies talking there at the beginning. And it was a little bit like, you know, just sort of gathered around, kind of having a conversation. And it wasn't, you know, he wasn't keeping that excitement level up.
Right.
And just chattering away sort of a thing. And it was a little odd.
But in defense of Chaz, he was incredibly prophetic about that turn three. And how much stronger Stoner was there, which was very critical on the 24th lap, but just in general, like I think it was like on the fifth lap or something like that, there was an onboard shot, and he said, "Look how much tighter Stoner is going to be entering this corner." And sure enough, Stoner went way on the inside of Rossi, and so I was actually because of that, I was able to later on, like when I was watching the race, I was thinking, this is where it's going to happen, you know?
Right. I think Chaz Davies, just particularly from talking, you know, hearing this commentary here and seeing his performance last year at Laguna Seca and everything, he's a talented guy.
Very.
And, I use the word analytical for Julian Ryder. I think that also fits Chaz Davies. Mm-hmm. Is can dissect, you know, the various sectors and portions of the track and watch and figure things out.
All right, we're going to do Eurosport now?
Eurosport.
The Bridgestones. Thank you. Rossi's going to do a Bayliss. Rossi's going to have a go. Oh, they're going to be hung out to dry. Stoner, don't go offline. Mamola was telling us yesterday when he rode the two-seater, it's like the last lap. Mamola was telling us if you're offline, you could be off the bike.
You are... This is like a boxing match.
Wheel to wheel.
Oh, it's the young contender and the old brawler.
Come on! Into the corkscrew. Side by side. It's what? Like the last lap. Oh, and he's on the grass. They're going to touch.
People said we haven't had a race at the front, have we, this season? It's been boring. Say that now.
Oh, I think the people in Ducati are having kittens at the moment.
Oh my god, that one just has so much in it.
Yes, it does. It's a cornucopia of fun. and also you got, you know, the comment where Randy Mamola is saying that if on the two seater you're off the line, you know, you're just screwed. There's
right.
no grip.
Right.
And you know, he's again, these guys know what they're talking about. And it's so obvious that they love what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's amazing is that there's actually a moment there where they both are at a loss for words.
Yeah.
Which is pretty astounding that those two would ever be at a loss for words. And then
of course,
Bobby counters with the guys at Ducati must be having kittens. So you know,
sounded like Toby was about to have kittens there actually.
Yep.
And but they it's. Yeah, it is. They are a somewhat magical combination of a commentary team, and it's such a shame that next year that Dorn is not renewing their contract, and that just sucks. So, well, all right, now we're going to come to the defining moment of this race, which was the lap 24 incident where Stoner goes off in the gravel, and again we come into this commentary snippet a little bit farther back up. I think they were actually in turn 10 when I sort of came into each of these chunks, and we'll listen to the different versions.
Nine, because they're saying something about like Stoner tries to go on the inside of or outside of 10. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah,
or something like
you might be right. So, okay, so let's go ahead and hear the BBC version first.
Okay.
Is the same, both on Bridgestone tyres. According to my sheet, they are both on the same compound.
Bear in mind, that side of the tyre was actually on the rumble strip the last lap around, so that would have serrated the edge a bit. As Stoner just runs hopelessly. Oh, no, what's going on here?
He's off.
No!
He's now got to pick the bike up.
Oh, that shot the fox big time, that battle. He just inexplicably ran wide there, didn't even look hurried.
Well, he's picked it up and he's now got dirt on his tyres. He's now got to have a look. Now Chris Vermeulen is going to hear.
Yeah, watch this, mate.
Yeah, he's down the inside, mate. He's missed. He's nearly run in the back of Rossi. That's what's gone on, Charlie.
Yeah, but he looked like he picked it up in time.
Yeah, but
look,
I shot the fox, so I'm not 100% sure what that was, and actually I had to listen to it more than once when I first to even determine the words.
It didn't quite sound like fox.
Yes, exactly. That's what I thought. What did he just say? But apparently it means, you know, he screwed things up. I did like
screwed
how
the pooch,
to also
shot the fox.
Charlie Cox there told Steve Parrish, he's like, watch this, mate. It's kind of like, you know, shut up for a second because I'm watching the race.
Right. Yeah. They did kind of miss the incident happening. They're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I think it was at the moment that, I mean, I can't see it, but I'm guessing that it was already when Stoner was going really slow and about to touch the gravel.
Right, it was almost like their attention was pulled away.
They're talking about the Bridgestones,
maybe looking at the timing screen or something like that. And but definitely still some very colorful commentary there.
And also note that when because they're obviously watching the replay when they're talking about it again, and they say that Stoner almost ran into the back of Rossi's bike. And remember that, you know, in the BBC. When Matthew Roberts is doing the thing in the Parc Fermé, you know, he asks whether Stoner felt that he was brake checked. So maybe they shared some notes or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And yeah. That whole thing too. I wanted like to mention that a little later in the call. Okay. Some more about that incident. So I'm making notes here.
Okay.
All right, let's listen to the same section of the race of Stoner's off from the CBS commentary team.
White motorcycle is Valentino. As he looks through the corner, they're heading to the hard-breaking turn 11. Oh, look at Stoner's bike all over the place. And Stoner runs wide off the racetrack. Now Valentino.
Oh, and he's falling over.
He dropped the motorcycle in the dirt. Casey Stoner trying to claw his way back into the world championship. Three wins, three poles in the last three races. Is now back out onto the racetrack and tips the motorcycle over. Wow.
Stoner hasn't even lost a position.
Casey Stoner tried to make a breaking move on Valentino Rossi, couldn't get the Ducati stopped. Then
the one point in that commentary was there's the amazement in Schwantz's voice when he says Casey Stoner hasn't even lost a position.
Yeah.
I thought, it did, because it did sound like it's like, you know, he sees all this and he realizes that Vermeulen had not passed. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, Stoner dumps his motorcycle in the gravel, picks it up, gets back on, goes back out on the track. Who was the lapper?
It was Ant West.
Ant West did ride past. Yep. But other than that, you know, Stoner did not lose an actual position. And Schwantz was, you could tell Schwantz was like, wow.
Right. And it's actually the only time that Schwantz actually really like jumped up when he was saying, oh my God, he dumped it.
Yeah. When he, earlier on, the first part where he did, Schwantz, you could hear him scream. I mean, he's like, oh my God, Schwantz, Stoner's gone down. And, But, you know, it's still a good, they did a good job on the commentary. I think I really do. You know, Greg White was extremely animated. And I think Kevin Schwantz, he brought Kevin Schwantz out of like, here, come in and chit chat about technical stuff and just, you know, let's just enjoy the race together kind of a thing. And I thought it worked out real well. So now, of course, the last is the Eurosport. Say that again. Negative, not the last. It's a Dorna version of the same turn.
To make make himself as wide as possible. A couple of different lines as well going through turn 10 and then through turn 9 and then down into turn 10 and lining up the last corner of the circuit.
Stoner runs it wide.
And he's going to run it wide onto the gravel. That could be the end of the race.
He's gone down.
Casey Stoner has gone down. Well, Stoner in second position has gone down.
Still running.
Is he going to be able to? He's in second position still, of course. Still running, but he's going to lose so much time now. That is the end of the American Grand Prix. Valentino Rossi is surely going to win this one. And Rossi, you have to say, has ridden an absolutely inch-perfect race. Casey Stoner's pushing it as hard as he could into turn 11 and just run it too hot.
So I got to say on that one, I thought that even Hopkins' reaction was almost a little subdued.
Yeah, he's off. Kudos to Hopkins because he really early on he says he's going off. I mean, he's the earliest out of all these guys. He knows that it's not like he's going to go wide. Like Gavin is still saying he's going to go wide, but Hopper's
he knows he's screwed.
He knows he's screwed. Yeah. He knows that corner so well. He knows that the moment that tire lifted for that split second, he's going to go off.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that this particular commentary take is actually not super fair for the Dorna guys in terms of the Pepsi Challenge, because earlier on this lap, when Rossi passed Stoner on the outside of turn 4, passed him after Stoner tried to squeeze in on the inside of 3, Hopper, you know, you could feel him jumping out of the chair there and was saying,
and he did, you're
oh my
right.
God, what a pass. What an amazing move. And both him and Chaz Davies. So I think that they were still coming off of that one when this happened.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Does it really quiet, like Chaz Davies, like, it's still running.
Yeah. I like that one too. It's still running. Pick it up. So, and now we'll do the last one, which is the Eurosport version of the same incident.
22 seconds behind. It is a rout by the two finest motorcycle racers in the world. Valentino Rossi lost the lead to Casey Stoner a lap ago, but Castano goes wide. That could be
That's the race.
And there's a problem. Oh, he's crashed. Casey Stoner has crashed out of the Grand Prix. He went into the corner. It was as if he had no gears. And Stoner is desperate to get back on the motorcycle. Oh, Casey Stoner.
Did Vermeulen go through?
No, he didn't. I've been watching. No, he didn't. Casey Stoner crosses the line in second position. Here we have a replay, Randy.
Listen, he just gets in there too deep on Valentino, runs wide. What you don't see is there's deep gravel on the edge of the racetrack. You'll see him hit it right here.
Well, that... Wow.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a problem. It's like
there was a problem. I like the way Julian is shouting, did Vermeulen go through? You know? It's like, did I miss something? And, you know, Toby's like, no, I've been watching.
Right. And then notice it's the only broadcast that mentions where, because of course Randy knows this track really well.
Yeah.
Where he talks about there's a deeper gravel. Watch it right here and boom, there. He falls down.
Right.
But I love that. There's a problem.
Yes. But and it does. I mean, and we're not, like I said on the beginning of this, we're not trying to say, you know, like I did last year, I'm not trying to point out that, you know, this commentary was so much worse than the others or anything like that. But it's inevitable that we say that the Eurosport commentary team is just so good.
Now, this is step 24. And they've been going at it the whole time.
Right.
At that enthusiasm level. It's amazing.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. These are people that know their stuff, that are excited about the whole program and can keep this up and can talk about it solid for not just the race, which is, you know, roughly what, 45 odd minutes or so for the race.
Yeah.
But you know, they do the pre-show and all of that. And they just you try it sometime, folks. It's hard to keep talking like that for that long. It really is.
And relay so much information and so much, you know, trivia and all the knowledge they have. They're world class. They're the best.
Right. And the thing is actually,
good,
you know, with any of
fantastic.
These commentary teams, Maybe I'm a more of an audio guy than a visual guy in some ways, because I've talked to people that say that they turn the commentary off and just watch the race. To me, that kills the race. I don't enjoy it nearly as much. I could easily, though, listen to any of these commentaries without the video and still feel like I'm getting something out of it. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. It's like the old radio, you know, listening right. people to...
Like listening to on the radio, exactly. Yeah. And they're particularly Eurosport is describing what is happening. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he's working it for a radio audience. And but all of them are saying, so-and-so, Grassi goes into the gravel or Stoner is off or whatever. They're describing to you what is happening. Just in case you maybe were, getting a sandwich right. or something like that during your actual enjoyment of the race. What's that?
Or a cup of tea, if it's your sport.
A cup of tea, yes, a cup of tea. Yes. So there we go. That's this year's Pepsi Challenge of Laguna Seca. I won't rule out
Eurosport
further
wins.
Pepsi challenges.
Eurosport wins.
yes, Eurosport does win. We're talking about racing, so there has to be a winner. And Eurosport does win. But and we still have. Don't forget that Bruneau is also going to be on CBS. So for all of those of you out there that forgot to reset your TiVos or whatever like that, on August 17th when we have the Bruneau race, don't forget it's on CBS. It's not on Speed here in the United States. If you watch it on television, like I do, if you watch it on the internet, like Jules does, well, it's going to be on the internet
at 5 a.m.
At 5 a.m, right? And I will actually be in St. Louis on that weekend with the guys at the Midwest Cafe Racing Association. So I'll be watching that race on like a tape delayed sort of a plan.
Mm.
But yeah.
Too bad for you.
I'm going to be having fun out there in St. Louis doing a track day at the Gateway Raceway or Gateway International Raceway, whatever it's called. And so that's going to be kind of interesting stuff. Well, all right. So that does it for that. What were the things that we made notes about? Let me flip back through my notes here.
Just going back to last show, we were talking about, the conditions and how come these guys can race in the rain, but fog would be a problem. And David Kane wrote in and brought up a very good point, which is that the issue isn't the riders, but the issue is like getting a medevac helicopter in that kind of conditions, and that's why they have to wait until the skies are clear enough to be able to bring a helicopter in and out. So thank you very right. much for pointing that out as obvious, and we should have figured that out.
Yeah, I know. When I read his email, I was kicking myself because it's like, I should have known that because there's other races that have been where back, was it a year or two ago when the onboards, they had to have a helo flying for the onboards. And every now and then you'd have a race where it's like, well, the helo can't fly, but, so we're not going to have onboards. But it must have been where it was still not quite severe enough for the medevac helicopter not to be able to fly.
Right.
And that makes perfect sense, and I'm glad that David brought that one up.
So do you want to talk about what's been going on this week?
Yes, let's kind of cover what we had in the news. It's been actually a fairly big week for news, considering that we're on the first week of the summer break and all of that. So first up, what do you got?
Well, so I want to talk about Gibernau. Gibernau tested again at Mugello, and he had some incredibly impressive times. I looked over his chart, and he was doing 150s on the race tires, which would have pretty much kept him up front, and he did a 148.9 on the qualifiers, which would have made him qualify eighth. So he would have been on his third row, and he had the pace to stick with the front guys. So, and he would have qualified 2 seconds better than Melandri, and he had a race pace of about 1.5 seconds better than Melandri.
Right, but
but it's been a while.
I'm sorry?
It's been a while. The GP8 has gotten better since then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. And I'm not knocking Gibernau or anything like that, because I almost kind of, when we talked last week and everything, and things were looking like that Melandri was going to be out, and it was either Germanauer or Nicola Canepa in. I was thinking, you know, boy, Germanauer coming in for the last few races this season, that's going to be neat stuff.
Yeah.
But what we did hear from Livio Sippo, also in this week's news, we might as well sort of segue into that, is that Melandri's ride is safe, at least through Brno.
Right, right. He was actually very... the team was impressed with him, both in Sachsenring and Laguna Seca. It was just unfortunate that he had the issue at Sachsenring, and then in Laguna Seca he went off into the dirt, but otherwise his pace was quite good. And they were satisfied that he was... And they just basically... Supo said he's working really, really hard, and his pace was good. He's starting to figure things out. So...
Right, right. What? So basically, and there's probably, let's face facts. I mean, the pessimistic or realistic or whatever side of it is of me has to sort of speak up and say that it's probably somehow related to money.
Yeah, it's a contract thing.
What's that?
It's a contract thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, the contract thing, exactly.
They'd all much rather, they all much rather have Marco finish the season.
Exactly.
Because it's less red tape and stuff like that. But I think
right.
That
even if they fall back on that contract clause where if Marco agrees and Livio Sippo agrees, then the contract is now null and void and all of that. Somewhere or another, there's going to be a lot of money exchanging hands. Plus, Gibernau is not going to race for free.
No, and, of course not.
Nicola Canepa is definitely going to want to give it a shot, but he's also not going to be racing for free. So, those guys are going to need somehow or another, they're going to have their own contract. And this is a big headache to relieve a rider midway through a season is probably not something they want to do.
Well, they've always got the MotoGP news option, which is to declare Marco insane.
Right, right. And I believe he's working on that still. So, right. But
I don't see Canepa doing it. I think it's going to be Gibernauer or Melandri,
right.
Because
right. Canepa's, not enough star power.
Yeah, exactly. And they're putting Canepa on a superbike. They put him on at least one round so far. We'll probably see him on a superbike again.
He's so young too. What was he? Is he 18 or 19?
I think he might be 19, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah. But anyway, young guy.
He's a young guy, and to make him bounce around from a GP bike to a World Superbike,
right,
and back again. I mean, it would be a bad idea for all parties concerned.
Yeah, he did a really great job at the testing at Indy, and that's kind of what brought his name to the forefront lately, and that's kind of also why it sounded like an attractive idea. Is that, look, we've got Indianapolis coming up in two races, and, let's put Canepa on the bike. But realistically, he'd probably somewhat get spanked. And if you put Gibernau out there, even if Gibernau got spanked, you'd have the excuse of, it's said to Gibernau. He came back out of retirement. He's old. He's creaky. His AARP membership isn't quite up to date. Whatever it is, and so Gibernau would be the much more likely choice.
Yep.
On that one, but I would have liked to have seen old Sete come out and just.
We may still see it.
We may. And I'm not wishing Marco ill. It's just that it's so sad to see Marco Melandri sucking so badly when I know the guy is capable of so much more. And this whole thing needs to get sorted out.
Yep.
So, all right. And then the Jorge Lorenzo thing.
Yes, there's two pieces of news. One was the fact that he actually is being immobilized for 10 days.
Mm. I didn't read that one yet.
Yeah, yeah. The injuries are severe enough that they want to make sure that he doesn't actually move the legs at all while they set a little bit. So 10 days of immobilization, and then, of course, the other story is his comments.
Right.
On his, why don't you go ahead and say that.
And that was on Autosport, right, I believe?
Yeah.
And hopefully the story is still available up here. I'll put a link into the website and all of that. But, he was telling Moto Sprint that you know, I mean, it, in a nutshell, I've lost my confidence.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's for him to say that, it's like, wow. You know,
you remember we were actually talking about that.
Yes.
Several shows ago, we were saying, well, you know, it could cause him his confidence. Then we're both like, nah.
Yeah. Jorge
Lorenzo. Also,
not only for us to sort of, you know, nah, but for him to say it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's one thing for it to actually him to think it, but for him to come out in a major publication like Motorsport and say this is quite shocking, actually. And I'm a little bit wondering, what, you know, have people been talking to him and saying, look, kid, you need to chill out and, you know, pace yourself, that sort of thing, which we also talked about. And is this part of that, that, you know, that he's going to come out and say, well, you know, yeah, my confidence is a little bit shot, so I have to learn to, you know, love the motorcycle again, blah, blah, blah. And so that sort of, you know, gives him some breathing space.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, just in general, he's been a very, very, very honest, or
yeah,
playing a very honest part.
Right. Know? But you know, honesty is a double edged sort of sword kind of a thing. You don't want to be too honest. You don't have to tell people everything. You know, it's like, and ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies. Might be somewhat of a better philosophy. Just I don't know. It could be some sort of an attempt. Or you know, not just an attempt, but some kind of a planned thing, or it could have been, you know, off the cuff remarks or whatever. But I was a little surprised at reading that, you know, his candid response.
Yeah.
It, at least apparently candid, you know, was once it's been translated and all of that. Of that he has, you know, how affected he is by it. And I'm not blaming him at all. I mean, I think it's a perfectly human reaction, and believe me, you know, I'd be all over that myself. But I was still a little little surprised.
Yeah, I think that you know, he's gonna have a tough time getting back on the bike. For him, this break actually might be, I mean, it might be good for his body, but for his mental state might not be so good. Because he needs to get back on the horse, basically, and not be afraid of it. Because he's going to be afraid every time he goes into a corner. His body's just going to be flinching and tightening up, and he's just not, you know, he's going to have to do some serious riding through that, and it's going to take tremendous willpower for him to overcome that, to be at the level that he was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and that also is probably part of it, is that he had. Because he had such a lightning start to the season, you know, he's getting on pole positions, he's getting on the podium, he wins a race, you know, in short order and all of that, that there's a fair amount of pressure that we're like, wow, this is the best rookie out of the gate that we've ever seen, or, you know, or certainly in the last several years, and, you know, just piling it on. And, you know, and I know I was thinking the same thing. And you know, and then he starts having his problems, and he's injured, and he's riding injured, and you know, all that sort of stuff. It's, you know, that pressure had to somewhat tell.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, I don't know. Now that I think about it more, some of those comments, I almost wonder if they are calculated comments.
That's what I was saying about the you know, the acting honesty
bit. Yeah.
You know, and speaking of rookies, I was just thinking the other day, like, if Dovizioso didn't have his little off in Estoril, he would now be ahead of Lorenzo.
Right.
In the standings. So he would be the top rookie, which is pretty amazing.
Yes. Dovizioso is doing very well out there. He really is.
Because he's you know, he's not on a factory team, and he's got those Michelins. I mean, he beat Nicky Hayden at Nicky Hayden's home track. He's never even seen the track before, so.
Right, fair and square.
Fair and square.
If you want to, yeah.
Pretty much the same machinery. Well, I mean, if anything.
Nicky Hayden Nicky would, yeah, inferior machinery, if anything, yeah. Right? For Dovizioso. Yeah.
So, yeah. Amazing stuff, Dovizioso.
Yeah, he's doing very well. And silly season has somewhat started.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so what were they saying for Dovizioso would be the
Dovizioso,
I just read this.
You know, a lot of people are saying HRC.
Right.
But you know, there's rumors that Alberto Puig is trying to block that. Obviously, he doesn't want this has always been Puig's game. He's always been trying to prevent riders that might outshine his prodigy, Pedrosa.
Right, Pedrosa.
So, yeah. You know, it would be surprising because we know that he has done things behind the scenes to prevent Stoner, for example, from getting into a factory team in 2006. Mm-hmm. And look what happened when Stoner did get into the factory team.
Right. Pucci is a force to be reckoned with,
mm-hmm,
out there. He really is. He's got a lot to say. One of the things that I was reading, the possible, you know, once we start talking about the musical chairs, that is silly season. Okay, so let's assume that, you know, Pedrosa's seat is safe, but that Hayden moves to Ducati.
Right.
Which, you know, however he's going to get that seat, that's a whole different silly season game. So now that opens up a slot on HRC, and they were saying Dovizioso might be a possibility for that, but that Team Scott, which apparently next year is no longer going to be Team Scott.
Right.
Is, you know, wants some sort of give and take going on about that.
Right.
Yeah. And there was, you know, there's a variety of different theories out there of what exactly might or might not happen. One of the ones I read, which I thought was just insane, was that if, assuming Hayden didn't get the Ducati seat, that Hayden goes to JIR.
Well,
or was it LCR? Huh?
I think Hayden was going to go to LCR, and I don't know who was going to go to JIR.
Yeah, exactly. Hayden goes to LCR. And it's like, I can't see that one happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see Hayden going almost anywhere except there, to be honest with you. Not knocking LCR so much. It's just, you know, why would he stick with...
I mean, there's... Kawasaki would love to have Hayden, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Suzuki would love to have Hayden. I mean,
well, Suzuki sells a lot of
motorcycles. Taken.
Yeah.
What's that?
I think Suzuki is actually very interesting.
Suzuki's got a surplus of riders.
Yeah, they're not going to field the third bike. It's pretty obvious at this point that they're going to just have two bikes like this year.
They want to keep Caparossi.
And they want to keep Caparossi because he's at least one more year.
Right.
And you know, Vermeulen is getting really good results and Spies is coming in. So it's really interesting because there's also, you know, been a lot of talk about who's going to replace Troy Bayliss at Xerox.
Right, exactly.
You know, that actually reminds me, what does Toby Moody mean by he's going to pull a Bayliss?
We didn't say that, did we? We talked about it when we were listening to the recording, but yeah, I know, I loved it. He's going to pull a Bayliss. He's going to pull a Bayliss.
That's amazing. Anyway, so they're talking about, you know, who's going to replace Bayliss at Xerox, and there's a lot of names coming up. There's Chris Vermeulen,
is one of them.
Max Biaggi's another, and Shaky Byrne is on the radar.
Oh, where'd you read the Shaky Byrne one?
Crash.net. But
oh wow, yeah, oh, yeah. National Enquirer of Motorsport.
But there's also been a lot of talk about it on the Ducati list. So you know, and I was thinking a lot about it. Like, you know, Chris Vermeulen is a good name.
Yes.
A solid name, very well known. He's known, he's proven in World Superbikes. He did extremely well in World Superbikes. And Suzuki is definitely taking on Ben Spies. I mean, at this point,
that's a done deal.
It's just, you know, a matter of them signing some contracts.
The thing is, like I said earlier, is Nicky Hayden sells a lot of motorcycles in the United States.
Right. I think Kawasaki would be. I mean, Kawasaki is dying for a developer rider, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hopper is a good rider, but I don't think he's a really good developer rider. And Wes may be a good developer rider, but he certainly isn't making any results. He's definitely going to be around next year at Kawasaki.
Yeah, Wes has been a bit of a disappointment for Kawasaki. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and who's Kawasaki going to get? I mean, who's going to want to come from the 250s? They're not going to bring up a young guy from the 250s who's not going to be able to help them develop the bike. They need a guy like Caparossi. You know, they need a guy who's been around. And Nicky Hayden's actually that guy, and he's willing to work you know.
Well, I liked your theory too. Also, that they should bring Regis Laconi.
Yeah,
and that, you know, he's basically being wasted over there in Super Sport or Superbike, and he should come over and get a season in MotoGP and basically help them develop their bike.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, he's not an old guy. He's like 32, I think, or 33.
Meaning he's not as old as we are.
He's been in GPs.
Yeah,
he's been in GPs before. So
right. Exactly. He's not a rookie by any stretch of the imagination, and he is a solid. I think he would be a good development writer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going back to the Xerox thing, you know, Max Biaggi's 37. Are you going to replace a 39-year-old rider with a 37-year-old rider?
just to get a couple of good seasons out of Max. I mean, seriously.
What's that?
You get a couple of good seasons out of Max. There's a lot of star power there.
But look at, you know, he had a great first season in World Superbike. His second season is spotty as hell. I mean, he does figure in races, but he's crashed. He's
qualified poorly.
Yeah. Is this the guy that they really want as their lead rider, the prime rider? Because I don't think Fabrizio's leaving. I think they're trying to raise Fabrizio as their next great, you know, long-term ride.
Right.
So, and then Shaky Byrne is a very talented rider, but he doesn't have any results fantastic results outside of British Superbikes. So,
right.
He's not a well-known name.
Right.
Outside of World Superbike. I mean, outside of British Superbike.
Right. This is true.
So that's why I think, like, Vermeulen is the most likely to take that Xerox seat, and that would free up the seat at Suzuki for Spies, and Caparossi would stay, and, you know, that would kind of all, that puzzle would kind of solve itself that way.
Right. And it's a shame that Suzuki can't field the third bike. I mean, it was discussed and gossiped about, and for all we know, it, even though they say it's not on the table anymore, it may be still on the table. But it doesn't look like it, that's for sure. Yeah, because of the Schwantz factor.
Right.
I mean, Schwantz has been involved with Suzuki for how many years? And I think that Kevin Schwantz would like nothing better than him running a team that had Ben Spies on it.
Yeah.
But even then, so then you have a sort of a Schwantz satellite team thing going on. You know, how well are they going to do? It would be, you know, the best place for Spies is factory Suzuki. It's just that we need either Vermeulen or Caparossi, you know, you need to free that seat up.
Yeah. And Vermeulen, even with his good results this season, he has been in there for a while. He's not, I mean, this is fourth season, third season in MotoGP. It's just his fourth season because he was on Camel Honda in 2006. Briefly, he was not full season, but he was just like two races.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't really count, but whatever. Anyway, no. But he hasn't really been. He's got wins. Yeah,
he's a good rider.
He's very consistent this year.
Right, but the thing is, he's not consistent enough.
Right,
like I've said about many other riders.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, though, is he also has had a bit of a resurgence the past few races.
Right, right, right.
And that, you know, you're always, as a MotoGP racer, and, you know, you're always as good as your last result. yeah. It's unfortunate. No, it's sad. True. It's true.
It's true.
Yeah, unless you're Valentino Rossi or unless you're, you know, I mean, actually, even probably Jorge Lorenzo can be getting away with a, well, you know what I'm capable of? I've just had a few injuries, so give me a chance. You know, he can do that. But I'm not 100% sure that even a rider of Chris Vermeulen's stature can really play that card all that well.
Yeah, yeah.
So
let's see what else is interesting in silly season is this whole Nakano getting the factory bike. Have you heard about this?
No. Again.
Yeah. So Nakano HRC said that he's going to get the pneumatic engine, and it's very interesting that they picked him because I think he is in no danger of beating Pedrosa. So he's a perfect guy to receive the engines and do the donkey work while still getting good results, because he's actually been amazingly consistent, 9s and 10s, you know.
Yeah.
So he's getting new bits. So some people were actually, I was reading some thread in the Right On 2 forums, and somebody was saying, well, maybe he actually had it at Laguna because his pace was really good at Laguna, but no way. I really don't think that there'll be, no one would have gotten the wind of that.
Right. I agree.
So that's interesting, because it also may mean that he's going to have that same ride next year.
Yes.
You know, with Grishini.
Yeah.
Grishini hasn't said anything negative about Nakano. He has said negative things about De Angelis, but not really about Nakano.
Yeah. I don't know. Nakano, we all know that Honda is desperate for the next great Japanese hope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, but has Nakano, you know, kind of come and gone as far as that?
Yeah, I don't think Nakano's going to be that guy.
No.
I think there's going to be some guys coming up in the 250s in the next year or two that may.
Yeah, there's some talent in 250s, that's for sure.
I don't think Alex Angelis is going to be gone after his first season in MotoGP, so he's going to be moved around. I think the most interesting thing is going to be watching what happens at Kawasaki once the HRC... I think it's pretty much in the bag that Hayden and Ducati are... There's going to be a contract there. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Kawasaki. I mean, they really have... it's amazing. They actually have a shortage of riders.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
who wants to go there? That's the problem, is they're doing so miserable. It's not just the fact that Ant West is having a bad season and Hopper had a couple of offs. The bike sucks. You know, and it's falling apart. I mean, they had three mechanical failures, and
it looked so promising last year.
I know,
it really did.
I know, exactly.
And in testing this year early on,
yeah, it's like they got on Dunlops or something.
Hey, is that what it is? Maybe they are.
that was all I had. Yeah, I did want to actually talk about one other thing, which is the stoner thing.
The stoner thing.
So I listened to your little rant last week. And
my drunken rant.
after you recorded the show and finished recording the show. And I'm going to have to distance myself from your remarks.
Didn't I mention that at the beginning of the rant, that this was my thing?
Yeah. Of course. I wanted to clarify that... the only place where I have issues with Stoner and his persona is that he seems to be confused about where respect and fandom meet.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think there's plenty of people who respect him quietly, just the way the quiet achiever thing.
How can you not, is the thing.
Exactly. How can you not? But he wants that kind of, I think he wants a different kind of recognition, and he's not getting it because he's just, he's not playing that game. And for all the people who are writing in about, oh, well, why don't you guys just watch WWF and all that crap, I actually really enjoy watching motorcycle racing. Thank you very much. So, you know, stuff it. But
I thought for a second there that you were going to say you really enjoyed WWF.
No. And I don't need these personalities, but they do make things more interesting. What I had a problem with Stoner had nothing to do with, you know, being a great sportsman or you know, playing up the PR angle or anything like that. It's the fact that I think he just broke and he opened himself up to a psychological attack from Rossi and showed a weakness that I didn't expect he had, and that is going to really cost him.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he will come back really strong, and he's going to have a good race in Brno. He'll probably win it, but we know that where that chink in the armor lies. He is a you know, for all the talk about Pedrosa being a robot, he is the robot when it comes to, you know, the rhythm riding.
If the race isn't going his way, then he's going to somewhat collapse. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I mean, he, you know, we could talk about Catalonia and China from 2007. What amazing races those were! But in preparing for this little segment here, I actually watched the race from Catalonia last year, and yeah, Stoner was very, very much toe to toe with Rossi the entire way, but the place where he was beating him was really on the straight, and mm-hmm. and he was able to keep the rhythm because both him and Rossi were riding a very similar kind of race. Laguna is where Rossi showed that he can ride, you know, every corner differently, whatever it takes. He can ride it, where Stoner really needed that rhythm, and he exposed himself by making all those remarks and making such a big deal out of it.
Right. I think that makes a certain amount of sense. And I've gotten enough email on the whole thing, including all of Stoner's comments and including my little rant and just a variety of different things with Stoner. And I still stand behind the comments that I made, that I'm disappointed in him as far as like sportsmanship, right? But that's a fanboy sort of a thing. It's like Travis Hinson said. He says, I mean, I'm watching Stoner, and I said, please, Stoner, don't make me hate you. And then he said this stuff, you know, and it's kind of that's almost the feeling that I had of like, you know, it's like, look, you know, you have a chance to be. To be a sportsman. And I mean, that sounds kind of corny and hackneyed and all of that in this day and age and whatnot else, but it's not entirely. And I mean, we've seen Rossi and Hayden and the other guys after they have a bad race or whatever. And they're basically, you know, on the verge of having a temper tantrum. And, you know, it is clear that they don't want to talk to the press. It's that they want to be, you know, left alone. They want to go and sulk and throw their helmet in the corner and all of that. I mean, we've seen Michael Schumacher. I remember seeing him in a Formula One race throwing his helmet across the garage. You know, he's having a temper tantrum.
Sure.
But it's just
those faces Gibranel was making at Rossi at
yes.
the rack on the podium.
But it just, this one came across so poorly from Stoner. It was just kind of on top of the comments after Donington and it just kind of like, you know, dude, you really sounding like a whiner.
Yeah.
And he should have just said, you know, yeah, dude. You know, I'm kicking your ass up or no. Something like that. That's all he's got to say.
I mean, he did, except the thing that I think I've lost respect for Rossi.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah, that's just,
you know.
Because I'm, and the overwhelming majority, at least of the email that you and I have received, is along the lines of that, hey, you know, that Rossi was right, that this is racing. You know, there was nothing in there that was dirty. You know, I'll admit, watching the race and stuff, there was
hardcore,
a couple borderline
but not
ones.
Dirty.
What's that?
It was hardcore, but not dirty.
Hardcore, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and there were some that, and like we talked about last call, you know, had it been Tony Elias, yeah, there might have been, you know, race direction's going to look at the race, that kind of thing. So I just thought Stoner dropped a ball there, and then it just, that on top of several other things, to me, as a fanboy, brings down my estimation of his character. I know that the guy can ride a motorcycle. You know, he can ride the wheels off a motorcycle, and he's a hell of a racer. And it, you know, if it wasn't for that damn Rossi pestering him all the time, you know, he'd be running away every race. But you know, I just didn't like it. So,
well, there we go.
I think that was, you know, relatively sort of clear and concise of me blathering on there. But, okay. All right. I think that we've kind of gone on rambling on a long time, and I enjoyed the Pepsi Challenge. That's fun. It was always fun. It was kind of neat to do it with someone else this year and sort of chit-chat with you. Yeah, no, it was fun. I liked it a lot. So We're going to go ahead and sign off for this call. We've got some more stuff on tap for next week that I think you'll enjoy. And other than that, why don't we go ahead and sign off?
Okay. Ciao, everyone.
There we go. There's another show for the books. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. And we are going to end this show with not our customary outro music, but the audio, the sweet, sweet sounds of MotoGP. And this is some audio that I recorded on the Sunday morning warm-up session. I was standing there on the inside of Turn 4. The crowd around me were relatively quiet. It was a pretty good place to record from, so you can really hear the audio. And we're going to give you a little bit of that "you are there" feeling, just to sort of hear the differences in the motorcycles, the throaty rumble of the Ducati and the Yamaha, and the high-pitched scream of the Suzuki and the Honda and the Kawasaki, and all of that. They all sound a little different. So go ahead and enjoy this. And now this is in mono. I normally do a stereo show, but this, you know, show's already so big, I didn't want to double the size of it pretty much by having it stereo. What I did, I put a stereo version of this warm-up lap audio up on the MotoGPOD.com website. There's a link in the show notes if you want to hear it in stereo, because it is really, really cool, and it's fun to listen to. So why don't I stop talking, and we can go ahead and listen to that. And thanks again for downloading the show. We'll talk to you next week. GPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.